Today is Thursday, January 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. One analyst says the U.S. and Ukraine have not flinched in the face of Russian aggression.
President Biden and President Zelensky both have been very firm. They have stared down President Putin.
As frustration builds around Mali, one expert says locals must speak up.
How do you promote local solutions if it's heavily tilted towards the international?
And the first aid flight arrives in Tonga. We'll have these stories and more next. During his visit to Kyiv, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken reassured the people of Ukraine that the United States will stand with them if Russia invades their country. After meeting with Ukraine's foreign minister on Wednesday, Blinken spoke with VOA in Kyiv about the U.S. diplomatic effort to calm the situation. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
As more Russian troops massed along its borders with Ukraine, Secretary of State Antony Blinken traveled to Ukraine's capital to demonstrate what he called unwavering U.S. support. In an interview with VOA in Kyiv, Blinken spoke about the gravity of the moment.
Well, first, we've offered Russia a clear choice, a choice between pursuing dialogue and diplomacy on the one hand, or confrontation and consequences on the other hand.
Blinken is traveling in the region this week as tensions on the border continue to increase. Here again, Secretary of State Blinken.
As we meet today, Russia has ratcheted up its threats and amassed nearly 100,000 forces on Ukraine's border, which it could double on relatively short order.
Ukraine's foreign minister, Dmytro Kuleba, called for Ukrainians to remain calm and unified.
The biggest of Russia's achievements today would be to sow panic, distrust in Ukrainian society, and to destabilize us from within. First of all, by destabilizing our economy and our financial system.
Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, thanked Blinken for his visit, intended to send a very strong message to Russian President Vladimir Putin as he weighs whether or not to invade. William Taylor is with the United States Institute of Peace and is a former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine.
But I'm sure he would like to have President Zelensky or President Biden be intimidated by this massive show of force and give up some things. So far, President Zelensky and President Biden and all of his representatives have been very clear that we're not caving to that kind of intimidation. President Biden and President Zelensky both have been very firm. They have stared down President Putin. They have not blinked.
After Kyiv, Blinken travels to Berlin to meet with key European counterparts and then to Geneva to meet Friday with Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. Speaking with VOA, Blinken had this to say about his meeting with Lavrov.
On the other hand, the fact that we are meeting in Geneva, the fact that we will be discussing the conversations and exchanges that we've had over the last 10 days also suggests to me that diplomacy remains an open possibility.
Meanwhile, in another show of support for Ukraine, British military aid arrived in Kyiv Tuesday, including anti-tank weapons, to help Ukraine defend itself from a potential Russian invasion. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
On his one-year anniversary in office, U.S. President Joe Biden held a two-hour wide-ranging news conference on Wednesday in which he reiterated his warning to Russia against an invasion of Ukraine. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell has that story.
As the President of the United States spoke on the eve of his first year in office, one nation lurked not so subtly in the background.
Russia will be held accountable if it invades, and it depends on what it does. It's one thing if it's a minor incursion and then we end up having a fight about what to do and not do, etc. But if they actually do what they're capable of doing with the force amassed on the border, it is going to be a disaster for Russia if they further invade Ukraine, and that our allies and partners are ready to impose severe cost and significant harm on Russia and the Russian economy.
For weeks now, Russian President Vladimir Putin has massed tens of thousands of troops along the Ukrainian border in what Ukraine and the U.S. describe as a clear threat. The two presidents spoke twice by phone in December, and last week diplomatic teams met in three European capitals to try to defuse the situation. VOA spoke with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in Kyiv, where he met with Ukrainian leadership this week in a show of support.
We've offered Russia a clear choice, a choice between pursuing dialogue and diplomacy on the one hand, or confrontation and consequences on the other hand. And we've just been engaged in an intensive series of diplomatic engagements with Russia, directly between us through the Strategic Stability Dialogue at NATO with the NATO-Russia Council, at the OSCE, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. And my hope remains that Russia will pursue that diplomatic path. It's clearly preferable.
Biden's critics in Congress say he needs to be firm with Putin.
The focus now should be on stopping an invasion, not talking about what happens afterwards. What happens afterwards is not really debatable. The Russians are going to have a very good first day if they invade. After that, the sledding gets very difficult, as they have found out in other places. Occupying a country is very difficult. It's expensive in both blood and treasure. And the president said he has pointed that out to President Putin. And that's something that needs to be underscored as we go forward.
Jeremy Suri, a history professor at the University of Texas at Austin, said that Biden is taking lessons from the Cold War when it comes to communicating with Russia.
One of the lessons from the Cold War is you have to be clear where your lines are so there aren't misperceptions. And so I think it is important. He is making certain that Vladimir Putin does not underestimate the resolve of the United States, but he's also showing that the United States has limited aims. Our goal is not to bring NATO or bring Ukraine into NATO anytime soon, but we will not allow an external power to dictate the future of NATO. So I think having those clear lines is important.
So what now for the two great powers? Blinken meets Friday with his Russian counterpart for another round of diplomacy. Meanwhile, Biden says Putin can decide on his next move as Ukraine watches and waits. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
North Korean state media on Thursday said Pyongyang will bolster its defenses against the United States and consider restarting what it called all temporarily suspended activities, an apparent reference to a self-imposed moratorium on testing its nuclear weapons and long-range missiles. Reuters correspondent Jason Albano reports.
North Korea may resume tests of its nuclear weapons and intercontinental ballistic missiles. State media KCNA said Thursday that Pyongyang was considering lifting a self-imposed suspension on those activities. Tension has been rising between the U.S. and North Korea in recent weeks over Pyongyang's unusually rapid series of short-range missile tests, conducting four so far this year. But North Korea has not tested its nuclear weapons or long-range missiles since 2017, as it started engaging in denuclearization talks with South Korea and the United States. Before that, it tested a missile capable of striking the U.S. mainland. However, Washington's push for fresh sanctions this month was called hostile by Pyongyang. Its powerful Politburo of the Workers' Party said the U.S. has reached a danger line, citing its continued joint drills with Seoul and its repeated calls for sanctions. The U.S. State Department and White House did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Pyongyang has defended the missile launches as its sovereign right to self-defense and accused Washington of applying double standards.
That was Jason Albano with Reuters. Frustrations are growing in and around Mali, where regional and international efforts to speed up the interim government's transition to democratic elections appear to be at a dead end. Still, key players from Europe and the United States are refusing to give up, warning what is at stake goes far beyond Mali itself. VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden reports.
Days after thousands took to the streets of Bamako, protesting sanctions and telling the rest of the world to back off, Mali's foreign minister hammered home the message during a visit to Mauritania. Mali will not abandon dialogue, he said, but the rest of the world should take steps to better understand. Despite the military government's refusal to let go of power, EU Special Representative for the Sahel, Emmanuela Del Rey, tells VOA she's confident eventually it will relent.
The pressure will be so strong that at one point they will have to come to a compromise.
For now, European Union officials are adamant about keeping tough sanctions in place, hoping a compromise comes sooner rather than later. But Mali's military rulers appear to be digging in, demanding a review of defense cooperation agreements with France and welcoming help from Russia, with reports that mercenaries from Russia's Wagner group are now on the ground, a move EU Special Representative for the Sahel, Emanuela Del Rey, describes as a step too far.
Cannot be accepted for the risk of having a domino effect in other countries, for instance. The countries of the region, the countries of the G5 Sahel, for instance, they fear that this could be an example that might somehow give the idea of copying the situation to other countries.
The possibility that other dominoes could fall has the attention of U.S. officials, like Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Michael Gonzalez.
Despite a decade of robust international investments, the region continues to trend in the wrong direction. Armed groups continue to expand their presence as well as their capabilities and their violence.
For years, the focus has been on a military solution. U.S. and French forces especially have been conducting training and counterterrorism missions across the Sahel to beat back groups fighting under the banner of Al-Qaeda or the Islamic State. But now the focus is shifting. International military efforts are being scaled back, making room for greater focus on development and governance, something the U.S. hopes to accelerate by pursuing full membership in the Sahel Alliance, a grouping that brings together the United Nations, the World Bank, and multiple other countries. The question for analysts, like CSIS Africa Program Director Mvemba Dizolele, is will the citizens of countries like Mali buy it?
How do you promote local ownership? How do you promote local solutions if it's heavily tilted towards the internationals?
Western officials say they are hopeful despite the unabating anger by many in the region, now front and center in Mali. Jeff Selden, VOA News.
The first aid flight has landed in Tonga on Thursday after an undersea volcano triggered devastating tsunami waves. A New Zealand military plane has brought water containers, temporary shelters, and generators to the island nation. Australian planes will also deliver essential supplies, as we hear from Phil Mercer in Sydney.
So far, just three fatalities have been reported after Saturday's disaster in Tonga, a South Pacific archipelago that lies about two-thirds of the way from Hawaii to New Zealand. The damage to property and infrastructure is reported to be immense, though. Aerial pictures taken by the New Zealand Air Force show several villages have been wiped out on some islands. Hundreds of volunteers and members of the Tongan Defence Force have been clearing ash and other debris from the runway at the main airport, allowing international aid to arrive. A New Zealand Hercules was the first to arrive. Satellite communications have been restored, but other telephone and internet networks could take up to a month to repair because of damage to an undersea communications cable. Rachel Moore is Australia's High Commissioner to Tonga. Speaking from the archipelago, she gave an assessment of the impact of the disaster to the Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
These places are devastated. They're described as a moonscape, and you might have seen some photos of that. So the fact that the Tongan government was able to support the people and the Tongan people knew what to do in the case of a tsunami has meant that the loss of life and the number of serious injuries is small, but the loss to property is catastrophic.
Two New Zealand Navy ships are due to arrive Friday, carrying water and other essential supplies, as well as engineers and helicopters. Distributing supplies is further complicated by the need to maintain COVID-19 protocols. Tonga has recorded just a single case of coronavirus. Tongan and New Zealand officials have been working out how foreign assistance can be delivered in a contactless way. Tonga has an estimated population of 100,000. There are large expatriate communities in Australia and New Zealand. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
With more than 18 million global coronavirus cases reported last week alone, the head of the World Health Organization says there is still no end in sight as healthcare systems remain overwhelmed by the influx of patients. But as we hear from AP correspondent Rita Foley, there is some good news in the report.
First, the good news. The coronavirus surge caused by the fast-spreading Omicron variant is slowing down. Now the bad news. The number of new coronavirus cases globally rose by 20% last week to more than 18 million. That's according to the World Health Organization. Scientists said last week there are signs in the U.S. that outbreaks fueled by Omicron may have peaked and that the number of cases could soon decline.
A new study released from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention finds that people who contracted COVID-19 and were vaccinated had the highest rates of immunity compared to those who received a vaccine alone. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn has more.
The study involved an analysis of coronavirus infections reported in New York and California last summer and fall. It finds surviving COVID-19 offers a high degree of immunity, dramatically amplifying levels of virus-fighting antibodies. But the study authors note the findings were recorded before booster shots were being given to increase immunity. And the report doesn't include the risk of death from infection, concluding that vaccination remains the safest strategy.
That was AP correspondent Jackie Quinn. U.S. Senate Republicans blocked voting rights legislation on Wednesday in the run-up to this November's midterm elections in the United States that will determine control of Congress in 2023. Reuters correspondent Gloria So has the details.
Congressional Democrats failed to pass a federal voting rights bill in the U.S. Senate late on Wednesday, and a major setback ahead of midterm elections later this year. The bill has been a top priority for President Joe Biden, who later tweeted that he was profoundly disappointed but not deterred by the Senate's decision. The Senate is currently split 50-50 between Democrats and Republicans. In back-to-back votes late on Wednesday, Senate Republicans first blocked Democrats from advancing the voting rights legislation by using the filibuster, which requires at least 60 senators to keep bills alive. Democratic Majority Leader Chuck Schumer soon moved to lower the 60-vote filibuster threshold down to 50. That effort was quickly shot down by fellow Democrats Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who joined Republicans in voting against the rules change.
A so-called talking filibuster proposal, smoke and mirrors. Just smoke and mirrors.
On Wednesday, Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell warned against changing the filibuster rule. That's despite having done so himself to engineer Senate approval for former President Donald Trump's picks for the Supreme Court. The voting rights bill would have guaranteed that any registered voter could request a mail-in ballot, established at least 2 weeks of early voting, and expanded use of ballot drop boxes. It also targeted gerrymandering, which regularly tilts the field to whichever party is in power across various states. Democrats had argued the bill would bolster democracy after last year's deadly riot on the U.S. Capitol, when Trump supporters tried to overturn Biden's election victory. Republicans counter that Democrats have fabricated the voting rights crisis and say that little needs to be changed.
That was Reuters correspondent Gloria So. A new report in Germany finds that former Pope Benedict XVI failed to take action against clerics in four cases of alleged sexual abuse in his archdiocese when he was Archbishop of Munich. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The long-awaited report on sexual abuse in Germany's Munich diocese has identified Pope Benedict XVI's handling of four cases when he was archbishop in the 1970s and 1980s. The law firm that drew up the report says that Benedict strongly denies any wrongdoing. The material was commissioned nearly 2 years ago with a mandate to look into abuse between 1945 and 2019 and whether church officials handled allegations correctly. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Carol Van Dam. Spain has one of Europe's highest vaccination rates and is now considering moves to change the way it deals with the COVID-19 pandemic to turn around its economy. The idea is to move from crisis mode to control mode, approaching the virus in much the same way as countries handle flu or the measles. Similar steps are under consideration in Portugal and Britain, where government leaders say the Omicron wave has peaked. The European Center for Disease Prevention and Control expects more nations from the EU to follow. Some conservative lawmakers in Britain are discussing the possible ouster of Prime Minister Boris Johnson over allegations that he and staffers held a garden party during the country's coronavirus lockdown. The party has a complicated process for changing leaders, which starts by lawmakers writing letters to demand a vote of no confidence. If the number of letters reaches 54, it triggers a secret ballot in which all 359 conservative lawmakers can vote. If Johnson wins the vote, he would be safe from another challenge for another year. If he loses, he would resign, and a two-stage party leadership contest would be held. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban plans to meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin on February 1st to talk about the progress of a project to expand a Hungarian nuclear power facility. Hungary's foreign minister told the Russian state news agency on Thursday that Hungary wants the $13.6 billion project to enter into the establishment phase in the first half of the year. The work would be carried out by the Russian state nuclear energy corporation, Rosatom. Jury selection begins on Thursday in the federal case against three former Minneapolis police officers in the Midwestern state of Minnesota who were with Derek Chauvin when he pinned George Floyd to a street. Floyd died in police custody. The three are charged with depriving Floyd of his constitutional rights while acting under government authority. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam. For about a dozen older hockey players in the Rust Belt city of Anshan in northeast China, creating a makeshift hockey rink is a labor of love. Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson has the details.
Old ice hockey enthusiasts in northeast China are tending to their own outdoor rink. There are no operating indoor rinks in the Rust Belt city of Anshan, so these amateur players have taken matters into their own hands and to a nearby frozen pond. They scrape the pond's surface each day before flooding it with water from a generator pump. The weather, at minus 20 degrees Celsius, does the rest. Chu Chekwan is a former player turned referee.
This rink is built by ice hockey lovers who put in effort and pool money. Some contributed lumber, some contributed boards. In short, we love this game. Everyone is an amateur. It was all built by the group with pooled funds.
Once assembled, the players lace up their skates and take turns shooting pucks around the ice. Many have been friends for more than three decades. They come from all walks of life, from civil servants to blue-collar workers and retirees. All are united in their love of the sport. But that passion stands in sharp contrast to wider indifference to ice hockey in China. Aggravating the lack of interest is the unremarkable men's hockey team due to compete for China in the Beijing Games. China has no professional league, and the Chinese team is ranked 32 globally. It was only allowed to compete at the Games after lengthy deliberation over its relative proficiency.
I wish we could get ice sports going. One obstacle is that there's too little of an atmosphere for playing this game domestically. We don't have an audience like North America's National Hockey League. Its audience actively participates and watches the game, and it is more intense.
For the Anshan players, though, hockey has never been about smashing Olympic records or playing in an elite league. Creating and competing on their makeshift rink is just a labor of love.
That was Reuters correspondent Flora Bradley Watson. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of Managing Editor Kate Dawson, producer Nadia Taha, and the entire production team, thank you so much for joining us today. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
NASA says there are some 28,000 comets and asteroids in our planet's neighborhood. The space agency also says the probability of a major collision is quite small. Hi, I'm Rick Pantaleo. Dr. Paul Chodas, manager of NASA's Center for Near-Earth Object Studies, joins me on the Science Edition of Press Conference USA to talk about asteroids and other near-Earth objects. Listen Saturday and